Our activities help the students and faculty in producing new knowledge and active participation in society's institutions. Our undergraduate programs in psychology, social work, and sociology are most valuable in preparing students for graduate education or employment in one of the many human service occupations or research-oriented activities. Graduate degrees in these disciplines have been deferred because of insufficient staffing and facilities. Attention, it seems, must be given to this issue if we are to retain professional talent in Alaska.
Time does not permit us to show you many typical scenes of home economics students engaged in various class activities. What you are observing are some scenes from a beginning clothing class showing students modeling garments completed this semester, as well as some activities from our nursery school. The Department of Home Economics seeks to provide for the liberal education of the student as a person, a citizen, and a family member through the selection of courses in the social and natural sciences, the humanities, and the arts. The curriculum stresses the development of competencies necessary to a professional home economist, with special emphasis on home economics education. The home economics major has two options: a Bachelor of Science degree in general home economics or a Bachelor of Science degree with certification for teaching vocational home economics. Enrollment in the home economics department is gradually increasing. 5 years ago, there were 21 majors. Today, there are 35. A note of interest is that these students range in age from 18 to 52, with a good percentage in the 25 and over age group, an indication that more women are returning to complete an interrupted education so they may take advantage of increased employment opportunities. Within the department, the curriculum includes courses in foods and nutrition, textiles and clothing, management, consumer economics, and others. The department operates a home management residence as part of its facilities, giving students practical experience in the principles of managing a home. Use of time, energy, and money are stressed. Since 1961, we have operated a cooperative nursery school for 3 and 4 year old children. The purpose of the nursery school is to provide a laboratory for students in home economics, sociology, psychology, and education, where they may observe the physical, social, and emotional development of young children, thus increasing their understanding of the developmental tasks of children. Being cooperative, this also provides for the parents an opportunity to gain a better understanding of their child as they observe the child playing with other children. Mothers assist with many of the activities. Parents meet as a group once a month to discuss various facets of child development. Since 1966, graduate courses in home economics have been offered through summer sessions. Although we do not offer a master's degree in home economics, it is possible to receive a degree through an interdisciplinary approach. One such degree was awarded last year, another will be awarded this year. Curriculum revisions are presently being studied with the intention of adding and or deleting courses, which will upgrade the program in keeping with the changing social and economic conditions, with particular concern for the needs within Alaska.
The Patty Building, focal point for many extracurricular campus activities, provides a varied program of instruction for students. In gymnastics, men and women work on all the Olympic apparatus and the trampoline. For many of our students, it is the first opportunity to enjoy this activity. Badminton presents a different challenge to our students. Through the media of shuttlecocks and rackets, hand-eye coordination is increased, and skill for a leisure time activity acquired. The Olympic-sized pool provides the setting for numerous activities. This intermediate swimming class has been learning to dive, improve form in performing strokes, and has had time for a little fun with an occasional race. It is possible for a non-swimmer enrolling at the University of Alaska to learn to swim and achieve life-saving and water safety instruction ratings before graduating. Jogging, stretching, exercising are all part of the activities in the posture and fitness class. One of the few classes restricted to women, posture pictures are taken and individual exercise programs are set to meet the particular needs of each girl. The girls in this class have lost a total of 90 pounds and 72 inches since September. Weights and measurements are taken periodically throughout the semester to assess progress. Everyone is aware that men play basketball. Here we have a glimpse of the competition in the Techniques of Team Sports for Women class. In addition to playing basketball, the girls learn coaching and teaching techniques which will aid them as teachers of physical education. The grace, fluid motion, and self-confidence achieved through performance make modern dance one of the more popular physical education classes. Students compose routines using art objects, words, or emotions as stimulus for creation. Annually, more than 20 different offerings are available through the Department of Physical Education.
Will jumping rather rapidly or radically from the campus, or this, some of the tape here was, as I mentioned, taken just this week, and the idea being what you can or cannot do is move around the campus with it. Just one small segment of tape, however, now showing the teaching in one of the village schools as part of the Department of Education's aspect of the TAPE program. We have a new program on the campus that attempts to prepare teachers for some village assignments. It's difficult to discuss the problems in the villages, and equally difficult, it's difficult to discuss them without first-hand knowledge of it, but also equally difficult to visit them. So we've taken the means of going into the villages with the recording equipment, getting examples of techniques or problems, and these serve as points of departure for discussion in the class work on campus. This data is used this way in the preparation of teachers now. It also was used, as I mentioned as we started, as an exercise for a graduate student developing program material so that she could see her effectiveness, and she did this during an internship in the village.
May I ask the leader?
This school is in a state school. It's at Mistoyahawk. It happens to be one that the state acquired just last year. This is the second year of state operation for this pool. It's on the upper Nooshiek, just above Aqua. Tape of this nature, I'm sure that 2 minutes of it is adequate at this time, but for serving the purpose of illustrating what can be done to bring people in and out of difficult teaching situations and to learn from them, we are finding great encouragement by the use of this type of equipment. I think maybe we can push it back out of the way now.
Darnell, is this a part of your rural school program?
Well, it happened that this particular tape was part of the Spring Teacher Fellowship last year, as is most of this equipment. It's not rural school, although we're dovetailed.
Frank, that young lady was a graduate of the rural school
yes,
program.
Yes, right.
Two summers ago.
The teacher here was one of the first participants in rural school project, went out and taught at a BIA school, then came back here for her master's degree, and the work that she was doing here was in connection with that as an experienced teacher fellow. Work being done in college and where the other departments explain some of theirs on tape. The education department won't go into detail as to the regular programs of preparation of student teachers and so on. Dr. Tate will bring some of this out in the discussion shortly. As far as this type of media presentation, we did want to be aware of program that has been developed through the Rural School Project and is now part of the Department of Education's work in connection with the development of materials that are culturally relevant and appropriate to the environment of the village schools. The Alaskan readers that are now in production are being prepared for the first 3 years of work by students, by teachers, and by people from outside of Alaska through financial assistance from a regional educational laboratory in Portland, and has reached the place that these readers are in 18 village schools this winter being field tested in the hope that next fall all of the state BIA schools will have available readers for the first 3 years of students' work, where they are able to have these materials that relate much more closely to their environment and their culture. I've made just a few overlays here of pages from the textbooks themselves. The first book has material such as this nature, where instead of the children at Equip reading about Spot, Pup, Nick, and Jane, they now have materials of this nature. This is the cover to the third level. There are 12 levels to cover the first 3 years. And as you can see, the complexity of the story material, the reading material, has increased as it moves through the entire series. They're not all finished yet, but it's become a cooperative effort between many people, including the teachers on the campus. There are copies of the actual manuals here, should you care to look at them during your free time and coffee breaks and such.
You put the other slide on.
Right.
This will give you the names and seating arrangement of the participants here, who will give you different information. We'll start with Dr. Haig and come right on around.
The function of the education department has been and will continue to be teacher preparation. For example, this second semester we'll have 49 students out of practice teaching in the public schools in large part of the North Star Bureau. The education department has 11 faculty members operating under a budget of about $300,000, about half of which comes from state funds. We have 11 people, specialists in reading, curriculum, administration, supervision, foundations of education, guidance and counseling, and special education. I think you'd be a little interested in some of our proposed programs and present programs that are just being developed. An interesting example to realize that 2 years ago there was not a single guidance counselor operating in the state of Alaska trained at the University of Alaska. 1 year ago we graduated 3 people. Today we presently have 24 people on the train. The same picture is true in the area of special education. 2 years ago, not a single special education, about 100 in the state, trained at the University of Alaska. For the past 2 summers, we've had institute. We presently have about 60 people under training in special education. We think this is one of our functions in the state to prepare special education teachers, guidance counselors. These are all master's programs. They need to be master's education. In addition to these 2 programs, we have the Master of Arts in Teaching, the Master of Arts in Teaching. This is an interdisciplinary degree of people who have a strong academic background who decided after obtaining a bachelor's degree that they want a master's degree and want to teach it. So these are mature people coming from campus-wide programs who decided to teach it. We mentioned the Rural School Project, funded by the Ford Foundation. About 50 people went through this each summer, and most of them going out to the ocean to teach. 150 have gone through 50 each summer. This is supported and started by the Ford Foundation. We're currently working on the feasibility study of awarding education with a specialist degree. This would be in the area of administration, supervision, guidance, counseling, special education. These are some of the current programs that we have underway. We're trying to meet some of the needs as we see them in the state of Alaska.
Would you use the microphone to get a better recording?
Yep.
60-61, we had 3, actually 2.5. One of the faculty was a part-time researcher. 3 faculty and 7 majors. 1968, we've got 7 faculty and almost 100 majors. It was stated earlier in the a film strip. We've got about 1,000 students, but if we take those are individuals, we take those who are taking additional courses, we've got about 1,476 classes in which students are enrolled with a total of 6,000 class hours of instruction. I don't want to sound pessimistic, but courage may be a virtue if we point out that this gives a ratio of about 276 students per faculty. To say that we are understaffed is a mild understatement. Where are we going to be 10 years from now? Well, we hope with a very conservative estimate of a 10% increase, we should have hopefully 14 staff, at which time we should be teaching a total number of about 2,820 students enrolled in all our courses, with a little under 200 students majoring. This should reduce the ratio somewhat to about 201 students per faculty. The point is this. I think we're all aware of the enormous social revolution, which 50 years from now may be evaluated as having as much significance as the space age revolution. This is a phenomenon that's true nationwide. Our guess is that it will probably hit us more particularly here in Alaska. Within 20 years, we should have added an additional 100,000 people to the population. The implications are obvious. We too are going to be caught up in such problems as crime, delinquency, drug addiction, and the rest. We can expect enormous shifts in the usual socio-economic political power structure. We can expect a complete or significant changes in social stratification. I could go on and on. The point to all this is that whether our department wants to or not, social, political, cultural changes and the realities that they produce are going to involve us, and we're trying to anticipate this. The involvement has other implications. Where are we going to get the staff to handle the problems that we're going to face as Alaskans? Importing them wholesale from the outside has many disadvantages. Our hope is that with adequate staffing, which we must have, and we must have a much greater provision of facilities in order to do research. Let me hit that for a moment. Alaska, it's been pointed out many times in the past, is a natural workshop for research. With the kind of student load we now carry, few of us really are able to devote ourselves to some significant research, which is peculiar to Alaska. Also, in terms of publications, which would have an enormous value to the academic world generally within this discipline, these two are falling somewhat short. Overall, hopefully, we will all agree that if Alaska is going to solve its problems, it's going to have to be solved by Alaskans. Consequently, the best solution to that, again hopefully, is that we encourage not only our students, our own students here born in this state, residents, but those from other areas to come here, learn Alaska, learn its problems, and the healthy balance, hopefully, between the kind of research we can do in those areas peculiar to Alaska. And with the increase in staff facilities and that sort of thing, we may be able to meet these needs before they get out of hand. I don't want to sound alarmist, but I think you'll agree that this is a national trend, perhaps it's a worldwide trend, and Alaska undoubtedly will experience these much more intensely than other places.
Curriculum presently taught by the Military Science Department set forth by the Department of the Army. However, we can vary slightly in the subjects and the number of hours that we do teach. This year, however, the Department of the Army is testing a new Reserve Officers Training Corps curriculum. This program represents a departure from the traditional ROTC program in that it will allow students to concentrate solely on academic subjects for the first 2 years of college. There are presently 11 colleges which are testing this new program. It will be tested for a two-year period, at which time it will be considered for extension to other institutions. In addition to this new curriculum, the professor, or public law requires that the professor of military science be given the academic rank of professor. Now, each of these positions will soon be validated to a master's degree. This is a change from policies here in the past. Officers being assigned as professors of military science must be graduates or have attended the Command and General Staff College or equivalent. There are presently 255 professors of military science assigned to ROTC units, of which 40% have graduate degrees. Now, the goal for 1975 is 100%. Another point which I would like to mention is that this is the second year or two-year trial period on voluntary ROTC. And we'll have to make a decision as to whether we will continue voluntary ROTC. As with any subject, there are two sides to the picture. Under the voluntary program, you generally receive a higher caliber of student. And this student is generally aware of his military obligation, and upon receiving a degree is commissioned in the military and serves out his obligation as an officer. However, under the compulsory ROTC, you can not always receive the caliber of student that you desire. However, we feel that 1 or 2 years of military training doesn't hurt anyone. Now, the military training teaches the student, or we refer to them, cadets, teamwork, coordination, and accepting of responsibility. The ROTC program that we have had here for the past 2 years, we have received a setback in our enrollment. However, with universities that have undergone this program, information that we have received is that this is generally true for the first few years under the voluntary program. You will have a drop in enrollment. However, the enrollment starts increasing after the third or fourth year of the program. As far as the Military Science Department goes, we will continue to try to enroll students into the university and, of course, into the Military Science Department. The department itself has authorized 3 officers and 6 non-commissioned officers. However, at the present time, we only have 2 officers assigned. We expect our new PMS to come in, I hope, sometime tomorrow. The 2 officers we presently have, we teach all subjects. This average out between 16 to 20 hours a week of instruction that we present.
The Department of Health, Physical Education, and Recreation is engaged in 2 general areas. We're involved in professional programs and non-professional. I'll go into professional first. In our professional, or academic areas rather, non-academic, excuse me. In our academic, the professional involves training of physical education teachers. At present, we have 28 majors. We hope to increase this number. We, in the future, feel that we need to build our department in the sense of expanding our scientific foundations. Presently, our program is skill-oriented. Our scientific base that our students receive is generally done by other departments for us. We feel that in the future, we need to do more of our own scientific background work with our students. Also, we have no graduate program. In future years, it would be necessary for us to add a master's degree program in physical education for our physical education majors. Our second academic area is that of service programs. And related to what Major Phillips said, with their drop in enrollment, we had a corresponding increase in enrollment. And frankly, it's been driving us crazy. We have more students than we can handle with either our faculty members, the number of faculty members we have, or the physical space in which to handle these students. And in the future, if we're going to continue to handle this large load due both to the voluntary ROTC program and the natural growth of the university, we're going to need additional faculty members plus additional physical space in which to hold these classes. This increase of students, though, has had a bright side to it, and that is student interest has forced us into offering a variety of classes. This year, for example, we have fencing for the first time. It went over very well. Wrestling is offered this year. And we anticipate student interest will force us into increasing the variety of programs offered in our service area. So we look for this to grow. We will need, in relation to staffing, a full-time aquatics man. This would be on top of the aquatics man that we are now hiring, in that we feel it's a full-time job not only to coach a swimming team and teach classes, but also the administrative problems connected with the pool itself. So we feel this is an area. We need an additional woman staff member, and we need this right away. We can't wait 5 years, 10 years. We have two members now. We need at least one immediately, more in the future. This is one of the few universities I've ever seen that has no outdoor athletic field as such. We play soccer in the parking lot, which is really not adequate at all. We need outdoor athletic fields for softball, soccer, touch football, many other related sports. Also, because of our weather conditions, our short season, we need a field house. And in the future, strong thought must be given to where we can start programs in the fall when our students come and the weather's nice, and continue the program through the end of the semester by moving them indoors where they can keep playing soccer or whatever the program has to be. Also, spring sports. By the time we could start a spring sport, other institutions around the country are wrapping it up due to the late breakup. And sports such as track and field, baseball can't even be considered here until such time as we have an indoor facility in the former fieldhouse where these things can take place. A major that needs to be offered by our department or by the university, perhaps with our department sharing, is a recreation major. Now, other branches of the University of Alaska right now are working in the area of outdoor recreation, particularly the people in forestry and forest-allied areas. This is very good. We feel, though, that a recreation major out of the university needs to be not only an outdoor recreation major, but also community recreation, a skill-oriented and a program-oriented major. And we think that our department has now and should in the future have the potential for inaugurating this phase of a recreation degree at the university. We feel that any recreation program that comes about will be interdisciplinary at this time. In the non-academic area, we're involved in intramural sports. This year we have a full-time intramural director for the first time. Our participation in intramurals has increased 3- and 4-fold over what it was last year. This will have to continue. He is going to need an assistant on a full-time basis, perhaps a full-time woman's intramural assistant in the future. The intramural program right now runs into snags in that you can only schedule so many activities within the building. There just is not enough physical room to put on all the activities that we'd like to schedule. So a proposed future field house would take some of this burden off us right now, make it easier to have more intramurals in the field house. In intercollegiate athletics, we feel that the present rate of growth should be continued in such sports as basketball, rifle marksmanship, and skiing. We feel that sports such as aquatics and skating, which would include our hockey, need to get some support, which they don't have now. They need to be pushed. With a dome covered rink, we feel that the hockey program will get some boost. However, the dome by itself will not build a hockey program. And I'll mention the needs of that in a moment as to what's going to be needed in addition to the dome. Women's sports so far are not in existence at this university. If intercollegiate athletics is a valid educational goal for men, it's also a valid educational goal for women. And some strong study needs to be made towards establishing a women's athletic program in which the women enrolled in this institution have an opportunity to compete with women in other institutions, both in the state of Alaska and outside Alaska. Future sports that will be added to our athletic programs probably would include wrestling and gymnastics. These are the areas that have the greatest amount of student interest expressed to us. Now, any activities, whether they're the present ones or the others, are going to require some support and some money. And we feel that only basketball at the present time is receiving proper financial support in the following areas. And these are the areas of coaching, travel, recruiting, facilities, and equipment supplies. All other sports receive some partial support in some, but not all, five areas. And we feel that this level of support must be. We are also engaged in recreational activities, and the Paddy Building here is open 7 days a week, excluding certain holidays, to members of the student body, the faculty, their wives. They come down here and use our facilities to swim, to play ball, check out equipment, and in general, relax and enjoy themselves. This will continue, and right now in some areas it's getting quite crowded. We also participate in special events. I'll only mention one, the Equinox Marathon, in which we had nearly, lacking four people, 1,000 entrants this year that actually started the race, 778 finished, and we anticipate this thing's going to be a bigger and bigger burden as years go on. That's generally all we do down here. People think we play, that's it.
I'm very sorry that I have to replace Dr. Lyons, because I would very much like to have him present our program. He sees it in a very clear way, and I have a little sheet here that he left me yesterday when he went home to go to bed with a temperature of the flu, and this is what I will try to give to you. In the first place, anthropology is actually a service department. We serve many other fields. People in psychology and sociology come and take our introductory courses. Our introductory course this year has, this semester has 145 people in it, which is too large to be personal, which can only be given in a lecture fashion, and which we need very much to break up into smaller groups. We need more staff, as everyone else has said, in our courses, because we can give them only once a year, and sometimes not even then. We give just a bare undergraduate major, and there are not enough elective courses for undergraduates to take, but we do not have sufficient staff. Perhaps some of you remember that the Department of Anthropology was almost non-existent for several years after the death of Dr. Scarlin. And we're very proud of the fact that now, with this hiatus in our program, we have between 35 and 40 majors. I say that because at the present regular semester, we are getting a few more majors who are changing from other fields. We find that another one of our services in the undergraduate level is to the Department of Education. The cross-cultural teaching, which is considered now as very important, is something for which anthropology is a very essential part of their training. Understanding the people of other cultures is a very important thing for us to know, not only in this teaching program, but in almost every other way also. We have begun a graduate program. We now have 6 graduate students. We gave our first master's degree last year, and we have had a tremendous number of applications for admission to graduate work from other schools, other colleges around the country. Our great handicap is that we have no fellowships. We have no way of helping graduate students to come to the university. I have a whole bulletin board full of the programs of master's degrees and PhDs from other universities, and they all offer scholarships of $3,500, $2,000, and so on. And we have nothing to offer in this way in order to entice students to come to us. And we need very badly to have some kind of support in this fashion, so that we can, in the first place, use these graduate students for helping our sections of the introductory course, if we can break it up, for teaching experience. And we also need these people to help in a good many of our research programs. We are also in need of developing a field school, both in archaeology. I showed you our little picture here of the work that we've done right here on the campus in archaeology and also in ethnology. These field schools must be planned very far ahead, and it is very hard to plan a school and then look for the money in order to do it. To develop a field school, we need to offer the students opportunity to go into the villages to do ethnological work, or to go to archaeological sites in order to excavate. The expenses there involve bringing the students to Alaska. Now, a great many of the students who come now with instructors from other parts of the country are doing the work which really we should do for ourselves, as I mentioned before. We need very much also, in the field of archaeology, to have a person who has enough time unassigned to teaching in order to follow up the many leads that we get on sites. People write us from all over the state and say, we have found such and such. Tell us about it. Shall we dig it out for you? Well, of course, that is where the thing is destroyed. Archaeology has got to be done very carefully and done in a systematic fashion. And we cannot have people dig the things out and bring them to us, because then 99% of their value is practically lost in this process. And we need someone who can follow these up. When a person has to teach classes 3 days a week or 4 days a week, he doesn't have time to go to remote parts of the state and follow these leads that we get. And we never can tell. Some of these leads may be absolutely impossible, and others may be extremely important. It also, I think, is very good for our public image to be able to follow these things. Because people write to us in interest, and we write back, well, it's nice you found it, but we're sorry we can't do anything about it. Or maybe we can do something next summer, or something of that sort. But we cannot follow it up with the need, with the speed with which we would like to do it. We also need enough of the staff so that we can assign some people to research. Research in Alaska cannot be done at all seasons of the year. And the interesting thing is that it can be done better in winter, as far as ethnology is concerned, than in the summer. Because in the summertime, people are all busy getting their living, and they can't stop and sit down and tell us about the past. They don't have time for it. And therefore, we need to have enough staff members so that we could rotate a person on research and still have enough left in order to continue with our program as it is given on the campus. We have an outlet for our research, and at present time, we don't do enough so that we can fill our papers. We publish the anthropological papers from the University of Alaska, and you would be very much surprised to see where they are. This last summer, I was in Europe, as I very frequently am. I go around to the small museums, I go to universities and visit, and I always go to the library, because it's amazing where the material for Alaska can be found. And every time I go to a library, I look to see if they have our anthropological papers. And if they don't have them, I give them a little brochure on them. And we have gotten a tremendous number of subscriptions. Now we've got to give these people something too. And if we cannot do some of our own research in order to publish it in our papers, we are at a loss sometimes to have adequate material to put in them. We are involved very much, as you've gathered from some of the other programs, in the preparation of teachers. We hope very much that all the people who are going out to teach in the villages will have some anthropology. They need it for the concepts of cross-cultural observation, cross-cultural teaching, and of course we are tremendously interested in the possible bilingual teaching. And then while anthropology cannot then give them the actual linguistic training, we have the linguistic training here to give if these people have the time and the opportunity to study it. We also have a museum on the campus, and it is very important for us in anthropology to cooperate with the museum and to help them build up their collections and also to have collections there that we can use for teaching. There are films that we can use, and we're very grateful for them. But actually, when you can go into a classroom and hand a student something and say, this was made by an Indian or Eskimo at such and such a time, and this tool is used for this method, here you can use it, you can try it out. I had a wonderful experience a number of years ago when I handed a student a stone tool, and he looked at it, and I said, don't drop it, it's 50,000 years old. And he almost did. For the student to have something in hand, actually, this is very important. And for that purpose, museum collections are very necessary. Not only the materials of Alaska, but comparative material from a few other parts of the world, so that they can see what is achieved here in comparison of what comes from elsewhere. We hope very much to be able to carry out this program, but as everybody else said, for this we need more staff, we need more funds, and we do need some funds that we can depend upon from the university. If you put in a request for a grant, it may come, it may not come, you don't know whether to get your people or not, and it is a very dubious matter. So we hope very much that we won't have to live entirely on funds from the outside, but can also use some that come from our own sources and are more or less assured to us.
We have utilized our full quota of time, so this will conclude our presentation.
Unless any member of the board has a question at this time.
I would like to ask Dr. Gunther how much of the campus surface is archaeologically important.
Well, the ground under the Bunnell Building is important, but actually this archaeological importance follows this block for a considerable distance. It's been tested in various places, and there are more places where we can dig. We can continue what we still have unpaved. We can continue there for our training of the students. And of course, we never know what we're going to find. It was years before we found this very important stuff in 66. And there is more to be done in this whole, the block above this whole town.
Thank you very much.
But the Bunnell Building is slightly in the way.
That's true.
Dr. Gunther, we know that there are a great many groups coming into the state, like, for instance, the digging fund, the Coleman Curtis Brown University, and I understand that there was some outsiders coming to St. Mark's, so forth and so forth. Is the university able to participate in any of this? Do you have representatives there?
Sometimes we can. We have been asked occasionally if we have a student who would like to join such a party, but as a rule, they also bring their students with them for the work, or else they are faculty people who are doing it pretty much on their own.
Is there any way that we can ensure that the university doesn't participate in the project?
It would be difficult to, without perhaps creating a little bit of animosity, it would be a little bit hard to do this. But occasionally they do write us. Now, for instance, we are participating, not with the university, but with a NASA project at Anchipka this summer. And
Ely Lake, are we in heaven?
Yes, there, Dr. McKinnon worked, and John Cook, who worked with him, is on our staff now.
So we do get it occasionally, but not enough. We would like very much to have more funds to do the work ourselves and be able to control it a little better.
One fundamental problem here, of course, so much of Alaska's only the federal government.
Yes.
As the Antiquities Act, as it's applied, they have to get a permit to get it, I think, from the Department of Interior.
They have to get it from me. They have to get the permit. The Department of the Interior gives the university the right to the Department of Anthropology the right to sign this, but I would hate not to sign one.
But we know now, didn't a few years ago, who is doing work in the state of Alaska.
Yes, we do to a certain degree.
But you have to sign a permit, we should know all of it.
Yes, but when it isn't on state land, federal land, then they come in and we don't know about it until they show up with their collection at the end of the season.
At this time, we're going to take a very, very short break of 5 minutes, and perhaps we can carry this on. Before we do take the break, though, however, I would like to introduce to you at this time a member of the state legislature, Representative John Sackett. John is from Ruby. John, would you stand, please? We'll take a 5 minute break. There's coffee out there, and 5 minutes is 300 seconds.